The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Charlotte Southworth, who is the Legal Director for Neurodiversity at Raiden Solicitors. So Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And now I'd like to know about your role at Raiden Solicitors.
So I'm a Legal Director at Raiden's. I'm jointly running the St Albans office with Catherine Raiden, Lena Gardner and Che Meekins. And as a sort of addition to that role, I'm part of the ED&I committee, where obviously we look at all aspects of diversity and inclusion. And I have been developing the neurodiversity policy and helping to deliver some internal training on that, which has been really well received. So yeah, it's a good little addition to the side role and the day job of obviously working with clients who are going through a family law situation.
Lovely. And I have to say, I think our listeners would be quite surprised how proactive Raiden Solicitors are on the topic of neurodiversity. So it's a topic that's close to your heart professionally and personally a little bit as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I myself have quite mild dyslexia, and there's lots of dyslexia in my family, so I have that level of awareness and I suppose additional empathy. I've become more and more interested in the way that various neurodivergent conditions impact on people and their lives, and working, you know, with a huge community of people to try to remove the stigma that attaches to these different conditions. There's clearly a lot of work still to do, but I think, you know, like we were saying, with dyslexia, it seems that people really have got the message. People really do understand that there are such positives that come with this different way of thinking. People tend to be creative thinkers, problem solvers, great with spatial awareness, different strengths that, you know, as long as they are supported and in the right environment, people can really flourish. And then from a client perspective, I think that it's become abundantly clear that the way that solicitors traditionally work with clients is pretty unhelpful for somebody with a neurodiversity. And there's so many small things that we can do, which perhaps we can touch on in more detail, which can make a real difference to people and their experience of going through the process of whether it's divorce or some other family law issue.
Fantastic. So how can a lawyer or indeed any professional take the needs of somebody with a neurodiversity into consideration?
So I think the first and really important step is to speak to them. Obviously, they might not be forthcoming about their diagnosis, and then you won't necessarily feel comfortable opening up the conversation. But where they are, then ask them, what do you struggle with? What can I do that might help? I've got a client I'm working with at the moment who was very helpfully forthcoming. And I said, what might help? Like, is there a colour that helps? And she said, yeah, actually, light green. So all of our emails with her have a light green background. And it's actually helpful from an organisational perspective as well. It's so easily done, and it's really helping her. And I think it just acknowledges that we're working together. You know, avoid things like attaching 10 different documents to one email. Can that be turned into one document or sent on separate emails so that there's less of a risk for confusion to arise or for documents to get missed? Talk people through big documents rather than just sending them off and hoping that they can get themselves through all of the detail. Take breaks. Make sure that people aren't getting to the point of being exhausted and overstimulated. I think one of the key messages is when you're working with someone with a neurodiversity on something that is unnatural to them, they're likely to get tired quickly and overstimulated quickly. So try to take breaks and build that into your planning.
Really helpful. And so it's so thoughtful, and I'm sure it makes quite a significant difference to your clients to have those little tweaks and nudges that will just make life an awful lot easier and make the whole process more accessible.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that, you know, especially if it's the first time that you've dealt with lawyers, it can be incredibly daunting. And if you've got to go to court, that's really daunting. So, you know, there are approaches that can be made. It's more and more common for judges to be addressed at the beginning of a day in court on somebody's neurodiversity, so that that can be taken into consideration by the judge, firstly in considering how the day is planned out. Do we take a few more breaks? That sort of thing. And secondly, in considering how the person might present in court. Most importantly, of course, if they're giving oral evidence. If they have dyslexia, for example, they might stumble over their words or say something that comes off as strange. But that's just because of their oral processing. It's not because they're lying. And it's really important that that sort of understanding is part of the overall case.
And can it actually extend to how family law is implemented? Can understanding for somebody's neurodivergency?
Yeah, yes. I think the answer is yes. It will always depend on the judge on the day, as we have to say. And there is going to be a divergence of opinion as to how this should play into the impacts of the law. But the Matrimonial Causes Act, which is the legislation which we utilise for financial matters on divorce, is clear that the consideration should be given to all the relevant circumstances. So if, for example, you have an ADHD diagnosis, that means that you have really struggled to remain in the same place of employment for a long period of time, or struggled to even obtain employment. That's clearly very relevant to your earning capacity, which is a factor that needs to be considered. There might be additional expenses to do with your neurodiversity. Do you have a coach or a special therapy or something cheaper that needs to be maintained? Sometimes people might have a special piece of technology on their computer and that has a cost to it. That all needs to be borne in mind. So, yeah, I think it's the key is in the detail with that, and also in ensuring that it's presented clearly from the beginning of the case so that no one could be suggested to be using it as a tactical advantage. So, it's keys in the detail and to just kind of be upfront and honest about it from day one.
Brilliant. And if a parent has a neurodiversity, can that be taken into consideration and can solutions be offered?
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be a case of that being sort of outside of the arena of the court. There's lots of, I hope, lots of assistance out there to be had. But of course, I'm sure that all of the government-provided assistance through GPs, through CAMHS, through Families First, it's all under pressure and there's always going to be a waiting list. We're lucky in this geographical location that we have Space and Advance, which are two great charities working with families to provide them with support. As far as sort of when it comes to the family law aspect and looking at what the child arrangements should be for a separated family, then both neurodiversity, if it is part of the parents' makeup, but also of the children, needs to be a really key consideration. We're looking at what is in the best interests of the child, and unless we are aware of how change will impact the child, how an arrangement which sees them having two separate homes and going back and forth during the school week might impact on them, then we're not helping that child. It's not right that a neurodivergent child be considered in the same way as a child without those different neuro makeups. So I think it's important for consideration to be given and probably for expert evidence to be used. And it doesn't necessarily need to be that there's contentious proceedings before the court for expert evidence to be used. Parents can agree between them to go and instruct a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or an expert in these areas to report to them on how best to support their child.
Because, as you say, even within neurodiversity, there's a diverse community.
Oh my, yes.
Every child is different. And indeed, because neurodiversity is genetic,
you are probably dealing with one or more parents that have a neurodiversity as well. So, and everybody has a different way of approaching things and different sensitivities, depending where they are on the autistic spectrum, for example.
Yeah, getting that diagnosis really is just step one. I saw a great Instagram video the other day where the lady was stood in front of her hob, and she said that the hob was a really great way of explaining what you're talking about with the spectrum, because you can turn on one ring really high and another ring really low, or in another ring have it completely off. And that's the same with a neurodiversity diagnosis. You might have an awful lot of that particular ring and absolutely none of this other ring / symptom. Yeah. and I thought that was a great way of explaining it. You know, it might be that as a dyslexic person, you actually don't have any difficulties reading, and it's all in the sort of logical processing area. So yeah, really interesting. But yes, definitely not one size fits all.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. And of course, we're delighted to talk to you on this topic, because October holds Dyslexia Week. So it's brilliant to shine a light on that and just increase everybody's understanding of it. Because as you say, I have to say, until a few years ago, you know, some people with dyslexia have no problem reading. I mean, that's a big... It still surprises me, because growing up, we had such a kind of image of what dyslexia means. And we know now it's so much deeper and richer and varied than that.
Yeah. I mean, my own story fits that, in that my dyslexia wasn't picked up until I was in the working environment, because I was good enough at school. And really, it was only the children who were falling behind academically that would ever be considered dyslexic. But actually, your academic abilities has nothing to do with your dyslexia or any other neurodivergence. Yeah, you can be incredibly bright and have a neurodiversity.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, increasingly, it's being associated with being incredibly bright now, which is great that we're moving in that direction rather than the kind of old-fashioned stigmas that we've all kind of grown up with. So it's wonderful that children's neurodiversity and parents' neurodiversity can be taken into consideration in family law. And it's wonderful that your firm takes it into consideration, like, strategically by having you in position. So when it comes to family law and neurodiversity, you mentioned we're so lucky to have Advance. You mentioned another organization.
Space.
Yes, I actually have heard of Space. Well, so they're local. And on the national level, you just remind us what there is out there to support parents.
So I think the first stop is usually the GP. And then hopefully you would get a referral to CAMHS. The waiting list for CAMHS is really long, but it is there. The other inroad is via your child's school. And they, I think, can make direct referrals to CAMHS. They certainly can to families first in this geographic location. And so those are the routes to support and to assessments. Of course, you can privately pay for assessments, and there's lots of different places offering those private assessments. So obviously do your research before you buy in. There's the SOAK, unfortunately, that's based in London. They're brilliant for ADHD and autism and everything, really, providing support. And another sort of maybe perhaps more accessible route would be CBT therapy, which I think can be really helpful for children who have a neurodivergence that is causing them to feel anxiety and stress in the educational arena. And you know, working with a CBT therapist as a parent to better support your child as well is a great option.
I mean, that is so interesting. I'm sure that's really valuable for parents too, to bear that in mind, that CBT is an avenue to explore, because divorce and separation it's a tricky time. It's a very tricky time with the best will in the world. But so having all the tools at your disposal makes a lot of sense.
That's right. I think, yeah, going through a divorce is always going to be quite stressful, and there's going to be a lot of change. And I think if there's one thing that we know about children is they don't like change all that much, and they like routine. So the more we can build in a routine where they're able to speak freely to their parent, and feel safe to express their opinions, the better they'll be able to sort of just, yeah, manage the change.
And what I love is the openness about it all that you're bringing across, Charlotte. And it sounds like parents and children should not only be absolutely free to raise this with their solicitor, raise their neurodivergent needs, but also be specific. Just kind of like you say, I like a green background in my emails, or, you know, I've sensory issues, yeah, whatever it
the
is.
The more specific they can be, the easier they're making it for us to help them. So, you know, it might be they want us to send them short emails, or that they prefer one long piece of information. It might be that they want to be able to fidget and doodle, and that's how they stay focused. Absolutely fine, but you might want to mention it first, otherwise we might be a bit sort of thinking, you know, just to avoid anyone thinking you're not concentrating.
Yeah,
I'm actually doing this to enable me to concentrate.
Yeah,
fine, brilliant.
Yeah,
it's just, yeah, hopefully being able to have that conversation, and you know, ultimately it's up to us to ensure that there's the right level of trust that they feel able to have that conversation.
Yeah, and it starts with openness and transparency, yeah, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and understanding. And hopefully, you know, if they have sort of dug around on the Raidens website or listened to anything like this, they'll know that they're coming to a firm where there is an understanding, and they're not going to be negatively judged for having a different brain process.
It's so refreshing hearing you, and you bring neurodiversity to life and understanding for neurodiversity to life, because I think the fear is always that it may just be a policy that a company or an organization has, but it isn't alive and well, but it sounds like it's alive and well and kicking.
Hopefully. I think that's always a risk, isn't it, that you get the policy and everyone's really positive about having a policy in place, and then it turns into a tick box exercise. Yeah. But yeah, we're trying really hard to ensure that isn't the case at Raidens. We've done internal training, and then that continues, just to ensure that we're all building on our understanding of neurodiversity all of the time, and understanding the value that having different colleagues brings to the business. You know, working in a culture of diversity and difference is great for everyone. And we're just trying to develop that. So, you know, understanding that one colleague might not work well in a situation where perhaps you catch them on the hoof and you quickly dive into a detailed conversation about X, Y, or Z. For some junior colleagues, that might completely throw them, and it's not going to be helpful. Pop time in the diary, set a little agenda, and actually you can have a much more productive meeting. Everyone will have the opportunity to bring their best ideas to the table, and you're going to get much more out of the time that you're spending in that conversation. And again, much like the sort of changes you can make to help a client, actually most of the changes are going to be best for everybody. Like, you know, yeah, try not to have sort of glaring, horrible office lights. Well, I think we'd all rather have nice lighting, daylight in our office, you know. It's just more important for people with a neurodiversity.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you so much, Charlotte.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. Really interesting, and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.